Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. President Donald Trump arrives in South Dakota in less than 2 weeks. Did you win the ticket lottery for the 4th of July fireworks display over Mount Rushmore? And how will that event unfold? Just as Dr. Anthony Fauci is saying that the next few weeks are critical in preventing another nationwide coronavirus surge. In addition, we'll continue our discussion about policing with the Dakota Political Junkies. The Sioux Falls Police Department is looking into a video of an arrest that appeared on social media over the weekend. So let's welcome. First, we have Jonathan Ellis, investigative reporter and columnist with the Sioux Falls Argus Leader. Jonathan, welcome back.
Hey, thanks to be here. Glad to be here.
Also with us, Michael Card, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of South Dakota in Vermilion. Nice to have you here too, Professor Card. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm pleased to be here.
All right, let's start with this event on the 3rd of July, a 4th of July fireworks display at Mount Rushmore. It's a significant celebration for the nation, according to Governor Noem, and tickets were in high demand, but so were tickets for that Tulsa, Oklahoma rally, and it turned out a lot of those people who were getting tickets had no intention of coming to the event. So, Jonathan, I want to start with you, and let's talk a little bit about the significance or the importance of this rally during fireworks display and the celebration during an election year for the president.
Well, I mean, it's definitely going to be a very symbolic event, I think, for the president. This is something that I assume that we will see featured in political ads at some point later in the campaign of the president being here, of fireworks. The president has made in the past remarks about Mount Rushmore, about maybe wanting to be on Mount Rushmore. So, again, I think for him, this is going to be an important event.
Jonathan, the Argus did kind of a breakdown of what states had people who were applying for the tickets. And this is really, a lot of South Dakotans, obviously, and then people from across the country. Has there been any speculation that the TikTokers and the K-pop fans are having a little fun in South Dakota as well?
I don't know about that. I had not heard. I mean, that was interesting that was an issue in Tulsa and that we'd not known, I think, at least I had not known, I had not heard that they were actually trying to do that. And so do we now know if they had tried to do that with this event earlier when the lottery was going on? I don't know. But there was certainly, I was surprised by the demand at the lottery. I mean, I think there was 125,000 requests for ticket for the 7,500 tickets. And so it's possible that maybe some pranksters were putting in requests for those tickets that we wouldn't have known about that until the Tulsa rally.
Right. And Dr. Card, typically they will say on social media, I got my tickets and I have no intention of going. It's part of the whole, I haven't seen that yet, but I haven't been looking very hard for it. Do you think that that everyone in the White House and maybe even Governor Noem and her folks in Pierre are kind of holding their breath a little bit to see how full the event will actually be?
Well, it's hard to speculate on what someone might think or say, but I would certainly be holding my breath if I were them. You know, the number of tickets requested averages about 6 per person. So it looks like people requested the maximum amount that they could. There's approximately 3,000 from California that requested 15,000 tickets from Colorado, 1,700 requested 8,600 tickets in total. It's certainly a possibility, but I doubt if there will be the protests that occurred or that didn't occur, as the case may be, outside the Tulsa rally at the Bank of Oklahoma Center.
Yeah. And the other thing we're watching is really this idea of the virus spread. And Dr. Anthony Fauci was on television. He was on Morning Edition this morning. He's been pretty vocal about saying the next 2 weeks are really important. Now, this is an event outside. But there has been some conversation about whether or not certain restrictions should be put into place for the Mount Rushmore gathering, and there hasn't been a lot of appetite for that. Jonathan, what do you think is really at stake for you know, for the gathering itself. If 7,500 people show up, and are we going to be watching for the next 2 weeks to find out if it's a super spreader event?
Well, I mean, certainly I think we will be watching. We were watching, you know, when the first protest started here in Sioux Falls and other parts of the country, looking for evidence that that they spread the disease. And so far, from what I've seen, certainly not, Sioux Falls, and I don't see that they've been really attributed these protests and these outdoor events to the spread to spreading this disease. So. But certainly, you know, people will be looking at that event. But I do think that what we have learned a little bit from the protests is that being outside, especially if you can social distance a little bit, that carries much less risk, I think, of spreading it than obviously being indoors and confined. So certainly, I think people will be looking to see if these rallies that the president is holding, including the one here on July 3rd, whether these are contributing to the spread of COVID-19. Certainly the one in Tulsa, I think, you know, again, it was the attendance was much lower. But again, it's an indoor event, so it's a different kind of event than what's taking place at Mount Rushmore.
Right, and it was a presidential rally versus a Mount Rushmore fireworks display. So not everyone who's coming is coming to see the president, although you would assume that many people are hoping to see the president as well. And Mike, Jonathan talked a little bit about just the significance of Mount Rushmore and President Trump's association with it. Now, Governor Noem retweeted a tweet from Ben Shapiro, who talked about how soon before people come after Mount Rushmore as a symbol of something that needs to be destroyed. And I can't remember exactly what words he used. And she said, not on my watch. So let's talk a little bit, if we can, about the symbolism of this monument right now at a time when across the country statues of George Washington and Thomas Jefferson and other slaveholders are being targeted by protesters.
Well, slaveholders and some who are seen as taking land from Native Americans are on Mount Rushmore. So there aren't many who would escape some sort of criticism. But I also think that Governor Noem is saying not on my watch. If I were the governor of South Dakota, I'd probably say the same thing. This is a great, just for the pragmatics of it, this is something that attracts a great number of visitors to South Dakota, as well as its symbolic aspect for most of the country, that these are presidents who were seen as moving the country westward, that our founding fathers, George Washington, our first president, certainly Abraham Lincoln, who kept the Union together, Thomas Jefferson, who purchased the Louisiana, or who saw the purchase of Louisiana from France, and Theodore Roosevelt of developing the national park system, as well as spending a good amount of his time in this area of the world. So it produces great citizenship moves and patriotism motives, and it would be awful if it were to be somehow destroyed.
Jonathan Ellis, anything else you want to add about this sort of symbolism right now in this particular time of the fireworks, which are not without controversy, and of Mount Rushmore, which is not without controversy, and the president, who is not without controversy?
The president, right. Well, I mean, obviously, there are some concerns about a fire from the fireworks display, so that there's that. Okay. To Professor Card's comments about, you know, the symbolism of, you know, what those presidents represent. I mean, you know, I think that you can have an appreciation for those founders and others and still understand that, you know, their time, that we have different standards now than what existed in their time, and still appreciate the fact that while they did things and maybe did that we don't agree with today, they were pushing the country in the correct direction. You know, given the standards that existed before their time. So, you know, I for one can understand the anger that crowds have and protesters have in certain parts of this country. I would say that with regard to Mount Rushmore, the minority group that was most aggrieved by that monument is our, you know, our Native American population, which at one point in time possessed the Black Hills through a treaty. So I can see why there's, I appreciate the monument. I can also understand the probably some of the displeasure that Native Americans have for it.
Yeah. A lot going on there. Let's pivot to policing in South Dakota. I want to start with you, Jonathan, because the Sioux Falls Police Department Chief Matt Burns was at a press conference talking about some social media footage that, or some cell phone footage that surfaced on social media about an arrest that stemmed from an alleged assault at the Holiday Inn. And help people understand a little bit about what Matt Burns is saying and what this video take. This is not body cams from police officers. This is cell phone visitors, cell phone video of bystanders. Jonathan, what exactly is going on here in this video?
Well, there was the incident. Like you said, there was an assault reported. Police responded and found the vehicle that was the description. Initially, they would not exit. You know, people in the car would not exit the video. An officer's arm got caught in a window and briefly dragged. And at that point in time, I mean, if we know anything about modern policing, that escalates the situation very quickly. And so when they did get the car, you know, they broke windows, they pulled people out, or their, you know, police officers are yelling at them using language we can't use on the radio. And you know what I saw in that, in some of that cell phone, but I mean, you would see in a lot of arrest situations like that. And so obviously the Sioux Falls Police Department is reviewing whether that was excessive force. Anytime an officer's life is put in danger, you see kind of that force from police officers. I mean, they descend in mass and they use force. And now the question, you know, the community conversation is whether you know, officers routinely use too much force. Now, the police department is reviewing this, and they may come back and say, "Now, this was within our guidelines." But I think a lot of people in other places would say, "Well, we need to re-examine these guidelines and how police use force and that sort of thing." Also, you know, I would suggest that if we've learned anything in the last few years about social media and cell phone clips and things of that nature, that we're not always getting the full picture, and so we would be nice if we had a broader picture of what happened.
What do we need for that? Body camera footage released, Jonathan? I mean, we need what to get a full picture of that?
Well, I mean, a lot of states, they have, you know, those would fall under open record laws, and that's not the case in South Dakota. But yes, body cam videos, if they existed for whichever officers, I mean, I think that would tell a story from sort of start to finish and what happened.
Yeah. Dr. Card, one of the challenges about this video is that when the driver is, and I'm not sure who's who in the video, it appears that the driver is a Black female. When she's pulled out of the car, she's put to the ground, and immediately the officer's knee goes into an area that on this, from this angle, looks like is her neck. And people were immediately saying he went right to a knee on the neck. Now she's talking during this. She's lifting her head up. So it's, you have to kind of watch it a few times to sort of see what exactly am I watching. But that is the controversy as well, is not only are they smashing windows and dragging people out by their arms, but immediately when she's put on the ground, it looks like it's a pretty swift move to restraining her with a knee. Mike Carr, what do you want to say about this idea of sort of watching an arrest and evaluating it from that armchair quarterback kind of viewpoint about what tactics are being used and what policy and what training and what decisions officers are making?
Well, it's tough to be a police officer because, as Jonathan said, if you believe that your life is in danger, your task is to immobilize those who are putting your life in danger and yet preserve public peace. And one of the quickest ways to immobilize somebody is to put your knee up between their shoulders, and you just can't move, especially if you have greater weight than the person that you're dealing with. But you know, we need context. It's, you know, as Jonathan mentioned, we need context. And some of that is body camera footage, which shows immediate up close that doesn't provide the context that a cell phone video does, but it also starts at a certain point and ends at a certain point, and you can't see what else is going on or what happened before the cell phone started. It's a tough situation for the police, but we probably need a discussion about community standards and how to keep our police safe and how to keep our citizenry safe while still keeping our police safe.
Yeah. And again, on social media, the people,
on that commission.
Again, the people in the car are saying in social media that they were scared, they were confused, they didn't know what to do. There had been they hadn't been part of any crime that they thought that this was a valid response for. So there's a lot that needs to be discussed. And Jonathan, it goes back to this idea of, if you have the license plate of the car, do you need to reach into the car and turn the engine off? Do you need to break windows to pull people out? At what point are we having these deeper conversations about how calls are responded to? Seeing them for the first time. Yeah.
Sure. I mean, and there have been, there's a ongoing federal lawsuit right now against, the U.S. government here in South Dakota, because of an accident that occurred after a high-speed chase. This didn't involve minorities, but the question was, in that case, you had the guy's license plate number. You knew he was on an ankle monitoring. Why did you have to chase him for 100 miles? So those are questions we've had in the past in other situations. This particular incident, involved an act of violence. Apparently, there was an assault. So I think that there, in those types of situations, law enforcement are at this time, I think, trained to deal with these things with more immediacy when there's potential violence involved.
Yeah. Jonathan, you've been kind of monitoring the community support of police as well as we have these conversations. We've had protests, and we've also had people who are coming forward and really intentionally showing their support of local police officers. What have you been hearing in the community about that?
Well, there's a group of business people here, and one guy in particular, they were really reluctant to publicly, they don't want the focus to be on them, but they want the focus to be on law enforcement. They are putting together monies to rent billboards saying, hey, we appreciate our law enforcement people. And, they have some electronic billboards up, and some static billboards will be going up. And suddenly they're starting to get a bunch of money that they didn't even, they weren't even kind of like actively trying to raise money. They're, but they're starting to get a lot of money. They've gotten calls from people in other cities who are interested in doing the same thing. And this is something that I would not be surprised to see spreads throughout the Midwest.
Yeah. We're seeing a lot of people, Mike, about, from Black Lives Matter protests, people of color in South Dakota checking in with each other, reaching out to each other, making sure that they're okay. And we're also seeing that from law enforcement officers checking in with each other, reaching out to one another, acknowledging this is a tough time to do the job and making sure that we're okay. What kind of conversation helps move this forward in a healthy way?
Well, we're looking at some deep-seated issues in our country, not the least of which is racism and income disparities, as well as how do we keep the people safe who are in charge of keeping us safe, and how do we appropriately respond to those who might not be keeping each other, the public, or our law enforcement officers safe. And until we have that longer conversation, I think episodes like this are going to continue to occur.
Mm-hmm. I think we have to not be afraid to talk about it too. I think sometimes we're afraid, not on this show, but sometimes people are just afraid to have the conversation, sort of think about it and be challenged about what they're seeing and what they consider about it. Before I let you go, I want to talk about this. Go ahead.
We sort of have a saying in South Dakota that you don't ask the question if you think you won't like the answer. And here we have to hear the answer. We have to hear each perspective before we can really move forward.
Yeah, agreed. Let's talk about the New York Times article, which pointed out some things in South Dakota, and this was during the Black Lives Matter protest after the killing of George Floyd. Sioux Falls Chamber had tweeted out or shared on social media a rumor that turned out to be a rumor about buses of agitators coming to downtown, and downtown businesses were picking up anything that could be thrown through a window. It was widely shared, and it turned out to not really have any truth behind it. Mike, talk a little bit about what's happening here with disinformation and sort of fear-mongering about roving buses. And for me, it's always a bus. They're always on a bus, and that's one of the first. That's one of the first clues of anarchists coming to town via bus. What's happening here?
Well, we even had a tweet down in Vermilion from the Vermilion-Yankton Police. Noting that their social media traffic indicating protests like those seen in Sioux Falls are coming to this area. And that was June 1st. And, you know, the idea of buses of Antifa from Fargo coming to protest in Sioux Falls is what first caught my attention. It's sort of like, really? Buses of people from Fargo? Other than for a Summit League tournament game or Sanford employees coming for a large meeting, I can't see busloads of people coming to Sioux Falls. But it's certainly the case. The second thought I had was from the 2018 midterm elections, officials in the White House speaking about caravans of individuals heading towards the border. And, you know, it is fear-mongering. And this is the very thing that we want to regulate Facebook about and want them to try to hold down on this because it does create fear in people and it creates fear unnecessarily. Right. There are many things in life to be afraid of, but buses of Antifa from Fargo probably isn't it.
So far, not top on my list. Jonathan Ellison, it seems like a great time to talk about journalism in that moment, because one of the ways I was getting my news is watching Corey Myers from the Argus Leader on Minnesota Avenue covering the protest, trying to lock it in Rapid City with her camera covering the protest. Journalists are going out and being part of news coverage right now, and that seems like a more reasonable way to get your information about who exactly is in your community. What do you want to say about some of the challenges of covering those protests in your own town when those rumors are swirling and you're trying to confirm things quickly?
Well, yeah, we heard the rumors, and I covered the protests that night as well. I was tweeting from our Argus 911 account. And, you know, I mean, it just goes to show that, you know, social media can really get out of hand pretty quickly. And especially because, you know, you take the Chamber of Commerce, that's a very legit group, and they thought they had legit information, and pretty soon, and that just took off like a wildfire on social media. You know, we certainly do our best to try to not go be in the rumor business, you know? So, I mean, that's a little bit of a different standard that we have. You know, in this day and age, even reputable news media kind of, you know, when things are just being, when things are breaking so quickly, even the reputable news organizations sometimes get things wrong. So it's just a very different world than the one we lived in 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah. Some of those challenges too, with just finding out, I mean, how many protesters are peaceful? What do you see? Where do you see it? How do you know? How do you know this for sure? It's hard to stay on top of, because I have friends who live downtown, and you know, they were sharing information very quickly about how to sort of shore up their community, their neighborhood, and to protect against any damage, any vandalism, partially because of that tweet, but partially because they were just watching what was happening on CNN and other national news outlets of, you know, this is what can happen, and this is what we're, and that what we're afraid of. But it made national news.
I don't think their concerns were illegitimate. I mean, given what they had already seen in other cities, and right. Of course, you know, going through downtown, I saw people, you know, putting in their garbage cans and all those things. And then there were people armed with rifles downtown that night. Given what they'd seen, I don't think it was you know, they had legitimate reasons.
Oh. All right, Jonathan Ellis and Michael Card for today's Dakota Political Junkies. Jonathan, thank you so much. You can find his work at argusleader.com. Thanks, Jonathan.
Thanks, Lori.
Dr. Card with the University of South Dakota, thanks as well. We appreciate your insight.
Well, thank you for having me. I hope everyone stays well.